Hi, I'm Marian McParland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is the quintessential bassist, Ray Brown, whose artistry has graced the jazz world for 40-odd years in collaboration with Oscar Peterson and many other groups, and now he's leading his own trio. Well, you were sort of a late bloomer with your own trio, aren't you?
That's right. I spent some time with Dizzy and Bird, some time playing with Ella Fitzgerald. I had a trio then with Hank Jones, Charlie Smith, if you recall. You were around in those days.
I certainly was around in those days.
And then I went with Oscar Peterson. That lasted 15 years. And after that, I went out to California and started doing studio work.
The first I knew of you before I actually met you was you and Oscar made this wonderful record. I think it was on Mercury. And one of the tunes was Tenderly. You remember that? Was
it one of the first records we made together.
Well, that was terrific. That has always stayed with me, that wonderful arrangement. I was fascinated with that. And then not too long after that was when I went with Jimmy to the Colonial Tavern to play up there in Toronto. And lo and behold, we were sort of the house band, and you and Oscar were coming in there playing as a duo. Now, wasn't that maybe one of your first gigs together?
Yeah, almost the first, yeah. That was in the late 40s.
That was a great occasion because I remember being scared stiff working on the same program as you guys, and you were really awfully nice.
Well, we had a lot of fun those days.
We did, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Wasn't that a good room?
It was a great room. Well, there were some good rooms in Toronto, you know, the Colonial, the Town Tavern. We used to play another little restaurant down on Queen Street that was owned by a guy who had horses. And first we started out as a duo, and then Herb Ellis came with us and we started playing as a trio.
Well, that's when you started the long stint with Oscar, isn't it?
That's true, yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, before we really get very deep into all this, I think we should play something just to get started playing. I'm dying to play something with you, needless
okay.
to say. What'll
Fine.
We do?
Let's do a little Duke Ellington.
Okay.
Okay.
What's the tune?
Let me see. My Alzheimer's will let me kick it in.
Huh? Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
What am I here for?
Good.
Yes.
That's great. Love that tune. Thank you.
lovely.
You know, that's one of my favorite Duke Ellington tunes, and for some reason, it doesn't get played all that much.
No, you don't hear it a lot, but it will never go away, I guarantee you that.
No, it'll never go away, that's for sure. Well, now you're here, and I'm thinking, where will I start with you? Well, I did start already talking about Toronto, and but now I'm thinking of some other place where I saw you, and that was Basin Street East, and by this time, I think Herb Ellis had been replaced with Ed Thigpen.
That's right, yes.
And well, I can't keep track of all the personnel because somewhere in there, Barney Kessel came with you, didn't he?
Well, Barney was before Herb.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had three guitar players, but the first two were only there for a short stints. Irving Ashby was the first.
Oh, yeah.
You remember the used to be with Nat Cole?
Yes.
Then Barney Kessel. And then Herb, and Herb stayed quite a while.
Then when Herb left, that was when you went to drums, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a lot. You know, there was so much. We had rehearsed so much, and all the voicings were worked out with the guitar, and it was just too much to have to do again. I mean, we spent a lot of time rehearsing with that trio.
You know, going back a ways, way back, you're from Pittsburgh, and is that where you started to play bass?
Yes, that's true. You know, I started out originally, my father wanted me to be a piano player. And he loved Fats Waller, as well he should.
Yes,
and indeed. Anybody should love Fats Waller, because a lot of people thought of him as an entertainer and singer. But this man could play the piano extremely well. And my father loved Fats Waller. As a matter of fact, every once in a while he would give parties. And he had a guy who didn't play so good, but he looked like Fats Waller. And he would wear tails, and he would play the piano and sing. And my father would tell the guests, oh, don't worry, after you get a few drinks, he sounds better.
Well, was that sort of your introduction to learning to play music?
Well, I've been around music all my life. My folks had music all in the house. You know, there were records and... They had parties and they had music. And the people who lived next door to me, there was a trombone player who had an orchestra. And I used to go over there and sit on the floor and listen to them every time they had a rehearsal. So I was around it all the time.
So you hadn't played anything up to that point. You were just a little kid, right?
Right. And then they heard me getting things off of the record. I used to get little introductions that Fats Waller played.
On the piano.
Yes. And so my father said, he'd come home from work and say, play me that Fats Waller introduction to so-and-so. And I would play it. And so they decided I should take lessons. And then one day he came home, he said, I got another guy that I like. You got to hear this guy play the piano. And it was Art Tatum.
Wow.
It had got a little more difficult to steal things, as you can well imagine. I think the only thing I could really successfully take off the record was... The introduction to Wee Baby Blues with Joe Turner.
Oh, my goodness. Well, then when did the bass come into the picture?
Well, I was in junior high school, had signed up for piano. And they had 26 piano players. So you only got to play about 15 minutes a week.
Oh.
And you had to sit around and try to stay out of trouble. As a teenager, it's very difficult to do. But I noticed there were two bass players, but there were three basses. So there was always one bass laying on the floor. So I asked the teacher, I said, hey, if I were playing the bass, would I be able to play every day? He said, yeah. And that's...
So that's
that
how...
Did
that,
it.
That did it.
That did it.
I always wondered about that, but then somehow, whether you did it on your own to develop this prodigious sound, I mean, did you just do that... On your own, you
no,
didn't have a bass
no, no.
teacher?
I think we all have, we get something somewhere, all of us. I'm sure you got something somewhere when you were young that inspired you to play the piano the way you play, you know. Duke Ellington was my inspiration.
He was one of mine, too.
Duke Ellington recorded the bass so well.
With Jimmy Blanton.
With Jimmy Blanton. That's right. That's how it started.
Wow.
I used to sell newspapers, and I would stand out in the snow because they had these jukeboxes, but it made the bass sound real resonant. And Jimmy Blanton played. Yeah, and I listened to that sound, and that's what I tried to duplicate.
And you didn't actually have a teacher. You just did, sort of did it by ear, hearing it.
Oh, yeah. I was just stealing everything I could steal.
Well, it sure worked, didn't it?
Well, they say if you steal from the best, you'll do better.
But then, after Jimmy Blanton, were there any other bass players that you listened to? Or was that really
there were
your
a lot, sure. But I'm saying, Jimmy Blanton, when he came out, I think he just wiped the slate clean, you know. I mean, nobody listened to anybody but him.
That's true.
Yeah. And, well, you know, he died at 21.
Oh, was he that young?
That's right.
Jesus. Well, we've got to play more. Let's play another tune.
Whatever you say.
Well, before the show, we talked about doing a ballad, and you know it would be really lovely. My Foolish Heart.
Okay, I'll follow you.
Hey. Thank you. Oh, that's such a pretty tune.
I like the way you play ballads.
Thank you.
Gee, talking about somebody that's not here anymore, Jimmy Rowles, I used to hear him a lot when he was at the cookery. I used to sit there with Alec Wilder, loved Jimmy Rowles, and he would go down there every night. And in fact, we could probably play something.
Yeah, Jimmy, we did 3 albums together, just the 2 of us. And we had a lot of things in common because Jimmy was one of the few guys left that plays lovely stride piano. And I used to always ask him to play it for me. And he knew that I worked with Ben Webster a lot, and Ben used to play great stride piano.
I didn't know that.
That's right. He showed Jimmy some things, as a matter of fact. And Jimmy has some solos that he played that he got from Ben, he showed me.
Like what, for instance?
One of the things that he loved to play was ba-ba-do-do-dee-da-ba-do-do-dee-da, like Someone in Love.
Oh, that's a great tune.
Yeah, it's a great song, yeah.
Well, let's play that. Can we play that?
Well, I'll follow you. Thank you.
Oh, that's fun. You know, I was noticing, Ray, when you were playing like someone in love, you slipped in a cute little interpolation there. Not very much of the tune, but Billy Strayhorn's Rain Check.
Yeah.
You know, I just love those interpolations. Now, there's somebody who doesn't like that. Who is it? Benny Carter. He doesn't like those, does he? Interpolations.
Or that's well, yeah, some people don't care for them, you know. But
that's what I
think
heard.
I think if they come naturally, they're fine.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If they come naturally.
If you don't force them, they're, you can tell if it's being forced and when it just falls into place.
Yeah.
And it's nice when it falls into place.
Yeah, it is. But funny. I guess my favorite of all time, if I can slide it in without being too obvious about it, is... What's that, Rockin' and Rhythm?
Rockin' and Rhythm, yeah.
I don't know. It's, but anyway, if one happens to get in here, I mean, I won't object if we...
Well, play a couple for me while you're at it.
I could play something, play a tune and see what would fall in. Something might.
All right, play something for me.
But I want to do a ballad. You like ballads and I do too. Here's one. This is not personal, of course. I'm a fool to want you.
All right. Lovely. Thank you.
I love that tune, and you brought that out, because I haven't played that in ages.
Well, it's got a wonderful lyric to it, too.
Has it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that tune. That's another tune you don't hear a lot, you know, but it's gorgeous.
That's true. Well, you don't have too many great days like this. My guest is Ray Brown. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz. Well, back to what we said about so many good tunes, and of course now what I'm thinking of is somebody very special to all of us, Ella Fitzgerald. She sang that among so many other
Oh, yeah. Great she could tunes. Do so many things well.
I can't think of one tune that she didn't sing well. And I mean, somebody, the other day I was playing a date and somebody said to me, play something for Ella. And so many tunes came into
that's
my
right.
mind.
That's right, you could do almost anything.
Cole Porter, yeah, Berlin, Harold right. Arlen. Well, I guess we could talk about Ella a little bit, couldn't we?
Well, we could, yes.
Because I remember, I'm going way back again to the days of Storyville, George Wein's Storyville in Boston. And that was when you were married to Ella.
That's true, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember you coming in the club. I think Jimmy and I were playing there. It was the house band or something. And you came in. You must have been going to open the next day or next week or something. You and Ella came in with your little boy. And I guess that's like the 40s, could it be?
Yes, mm-hmm. Late 40s, yeah.
Wow.
Early 50s, somewhere around in there. That's a long time ago.
Yes, it is. But all these things are so important to me in my mind and my jazz history. And so.
Well, you know, I always think of years ago when I first met Ella, probably the most prominent singer around in those days was Bing Crosby.
Oh, yeah, right.
That's right. And he made a statement, and he said, man, woman, or child, Ella Fitzgerald's the greatest singer I ever heard. I thought it was a great statement.
Well, and it's probably true, I would
That's
say.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's funny, because I had no idea that I was going to come to America, and I was playing the record player in the house in England when she recorded A Tisket a Tasket. And so, you know, I heard that very first, it was like the first thing she did, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I'm thinking to myself, boy, this is really something, you know. That was part, that tune was part of my jazz education, the Chick Webb Band. I mean,
yeah, it was a big hit for her.
Sure it was. And I mean, she would periodically do it again, didn't she? I mean, she.
She kept bringing it back, yeah.
Well.
Well, she was identified with it. It's some singers have a tune and they don't get any more, you know. And that tune has to last them their whole careers. And sometimes it works. You take a guy who sang a lot of songs, let's say a guy like Herb Jeffries. But if you think of him, you think of Flamingo.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right away.
Jeffries.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And that's the only one you think of.
Yeah.
But with Ella, you could take any composer. I could think the tune that came to mind when somebody said play something for Ella. I think I played this.
Everything I Love.
Everything I Love.
Gorgeous song. Tune. I love it.
Well, what could we do? What would you think would be a good thing for us to do?
Let me try something on you.
Is it going to be Lady Be Good?
Yeah.
All right, I'm game.
Okay.
love it.
She sang that song so good. And she sang it sometimes as a ballad. She did it with Nelson Riddle, did an arrangement with strings for her. And that was gorgeous also.
I remember that. But I also remember some of the things she did with Ellis Larkins.
Oh, yeah.
That was, in fact, I have one at home. It's a 10-inch, I guess. And I think there were some, probably some Cole Porter songs on there. I get mixed up because I've got so many of them. I forget what is on what record.
But like, what song are you
Embrace
thinking about?
For You was what, yeah. Was the one I was thinking. Would you want to do that?
Fine with me. Thank you.
You know, that's such a great song, and I haven't played that for such a long time, and it really makes me feel good every time I play it.
Yeah, I love that tune also.
Well, I thought I might do a Hoagy Carmichael tune that only gets played once in a while, and this one's called One Morning in May.
Well, I like that. Play it for me.
Okay.
You know, what I like that you do is that you're not ashamed of the melody.
Oh, what?
You're not a let... No, but listen to me.
Oh, that's interesting.
So many young people hide the melody. You don't know what they're playing. I mean,
that's
they play
true.
Good, but you... They play like they're ashamed to be caught playing the melody.
You know, nobody's ever said that, to my knowledge. I mean, that's a very interesting statement. I don't know if it's that they're ashamed so much as it's sort of, well, look at all these wild chords I can play on this tune. I don't have to play the melody because I can play a bunch of wild chords. Could it be that?
Well, you know, when I used to try to write songs, somebody told me something very interesting. I came in and played one of my songs for this guy, and I had all kind of fancy chords, you know. When I finished, he said, "That's nice, but do me a favor." He said, "Put your left hand behind your back and play the melody with one finger." He said, "And if you still like it, then okay." And that's a valuable lesson.
You know, it is. But that you just really said something interesting there, because it does seem as if they, maybe not ashamed, but they avoid the melody at all costs.
But let me show you an example. If I play... Yes. It doesn't need any doctoring. Just the melody is gorgeous. And I don't care how much you fancy that up, it isn't going to be any better than the melody itself.
Well, you picked a very good example. That is a great melody. But that's something I'll remember for a long time. Or I'll probably, next time I speak to some kids, I'll probably say that very thing. You know, Ray Brown said to me, blah, blah, blah.
Now, I tell you what I want you to do for me. One thing we haven't played is some blues. And I don't want to play any fast blues. You know, I think originally when blues first started, the blues were something that were the problems that you had. And you didn't tell somebody, "Oh man, I have to..." You know, you said, "It was really, really bad for me today." And you start to tell them, you know. And I think this is the way I'd like to have us just start in some key and just start, you know.
You mean no, but no particular.
You know, just some straight out blues without any help, any fancy, just easy.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
I think you're right. That's what, well, that's, that is really the blues. But then you could take the same thing when you're in a more cheerful mood and you could sort of double it up.
Oh, there's a lot of things you could do to it, sure.
Okay, well, just because I guess I'm really eager to have more of that lovely time feeling. I don't get that every day with having you here, you know, and I'd like to do that same thing just a little faster for a different feeling. Are you game for that?
You play anything you want to play.
Well, it's just more blues, that's all. That's Oscar Pettiford, isn't it?
Yes.
Swing till the girls come home.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and her guest, Ray Brown, a program which was originally broadcast in 1996. Join us each week at this time for programs from the Piano Jazz Archives with Marion McPartland and outstanding guest artists. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina Public Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Richard Applegate, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production coordinator Meg Hires, executive producer Tom Clark. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz, NPR member stations, and NPR. Funding for the digital archiving of Piano Jazz was provided by Save America's Treasures through a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service Department of the Interior. Support for NPR comes from NPR contributors, which include the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.